Good morning and welcome to another edition of Biz Talk. My name is Tony Bush and I'm in the studio this morning with Randy Melzer. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Tony. How's it going today?
Real fine. I want to welcome you to another edition of Biz Talk this morning. We have a very great show for you this morning. Our guest is Andy Rossmeisel. Andy is an attorney with the law firm Hurling Clark Law Firm. Please stay tuned because you'll have the opportunity to not only hear some good legal advice this morning and good tips, but also to call in with some questions. And Andy will be giving out his contact information as well. But before we get to Andy, we want to thank you again for tuning in. We want this to be a how-to program for our listening audience, for anyone who's starting a business or someone who's in business. We bring advice, we bring inspiration, we bring some information that might be helpful to you to be more successful. And we also support the SCORE chapter here in Appleton. BizTalk supports the local SCORE chapter, and the SCORE chapter has about 50 mentors from Appleton to Oshkosh to Fond du Lac. We service an 8-county area, and we provide free mentoring services to business owners. We're part of a national organization that we're affiliated with the Small Business Administration. So if you're in business or you're thinking of going into business, please consider SCORE as a resource for you to grow your company. And you can learn more about our SCORE chapter at foxcities.score.org, which is our website. And if you're interested in signing up for a mentoring session with an experienced mentor, please fill out the application form on the website, hit the send button, and within several days, a mentor will be contacting you to schedule a session with you. It's all free, and the mentors are trained, and they're experts in their field. So please consider SCORE for that resource. Randy's going to tell us a little bit about some of the training things that are coming up. SCORE gets involved in putting on some seminars. Randy, what's coming up with the SCORE chapter this week?
Yeah, Tony, yeah, we've got a lot of stuff going on with seminars and programs that are coming up. The first one, of course, is going to be this coming Thursday. So if you haven't registered, there's still time to get out to the website. Again, that was the foxcities.score.org. Click on the local programs, and you'll see this particular seminar coming up. It's going to be on legal questions, some of the errors and pitfalls of starting a business, and the 10 most common mistakes that people make when starting their business. It's going to be on the 19th. That's Thursday morning. Thursday morning. It'll be from 8 a.m. until 11, so it'll be 3 hours. It'll be located at the Fox Cities Chamber office at our SCORE location. And we're going to have Kevin Eisman, who is from Epiphany Law, who's a very well-known business law firm here in the Valley, who'll be doing the presentation for us. So you get 3 hours of legal presentation for $35, which isn't a bad deal.
And Kevin has done his presentation in the past. It's pretty well received, and it's usually pretty well attended.
Yes.
So if you do have an interest in joining us on Thursday morning, please visit the website at foxcities.score.org, or you could call the Chamber of Commerce at 734-7101.
Right.
To reserve a seat.
Right. And the next program coming up after that, of course, is going to be the Simple Steps program. We've run this a couple times, and what it is a five-step program for people who are looking to start their own business, to find out what it's all about to be an entrepreneur, and then to find out some specifics as what it takes to do that, including areas as far as what the business organization should look like, marketing questions, the financial documentation, what you need as far as cash flow, that type of thing, and then of course the area of where do I find the money. So we cover all of those areas for you. The first program on that is going to be on May 17th. It's going to be in the morning. It'll be from around 8 a.m. until 12:30. It's at the Copper Rock, which is the coffee shop right there in downtown Appleton. They have a very nice new meeting room there on the side, so we should have plenty of room. And that will, like I said, be from 8 until 12:30, include lunch. And the cost of that particular program is only $25. Then after that, we will have four other sessions. Each one of those sessions is also $25 each. They will be on Wednesday nights in June, beginning June 6th, and each Wednesday thereafter for 4 weeks.
So it's really five connected evenings.
Correct. But we try to...
First one's just an orientation, then we get into the meat of it with the next four.
Right.
If someone signs up for all five, is there... $125?
It'll be $125.
Got it.
So, yeah, it's $25 per... Now, the first one, of course, is so that you get an idea. you know, am I going to be an entrepreneur? Do I really want to follow through with this and so on? If you feel then, we register you for the next four. Plus, we also sign you up with a mentor so that you have one of our score mentors working with you to help you with the, because there's homework. We don't let you get a buy without, with just sitting
elbow
there nodding.
You've got to put some effort into
it. You
your...
betcha. So yeah. Anyway, excellent programs to be looking forward to.
This is our third run at this Simple Steps program.
Yes, yeah.
It's been well received.
Very well. Yeah. We've got out of it the last one. We have two businesses that have started, and we have a number of people who are still in the program looking at where they want to go and getting all their parts and pieces put together. So,
and I would imagine some of the folks who attended, after learning what's involved in a business and running a business, maybe made the wise decision to not start their business right now.
Correct.
That's just as much of a success as someone who goes to start the business.
Right. Yeah. There's
just making informed decisions.
Yeah, and we accept that as a very good outcome, because that's the key.
Absolutely.
What we're looking to do is have you make an intelligent decision. Most of the time when you start out as an entrepreneur, a lot of emotions take place.
Sure.
And this is to kind of help you sort through those and get down to the real hardcore questions.
Yep. Thanks, Randy. Also, at this time, I'd like to just say thank you to the sponsors who bring BizTalk to you every weekend. Those sponsors include Associated Bank. They've been with us for a number of years now. We really appreciate their support. Also want to thank Alberts and Haling CPAs. This is their last busy weekend. All the CPAs in town disappear now as of Tuesday night. They're going to be gone for about 3 months, I think, taking vacations. It's quite a run for the accountants, but we want to thank Alberts and Haling with offices in Green Bay and Appleton. Also want to thank Lakeview Credit Union for being a sponsor. They have offices in Nina and Appleton. And they also provide business lending, consumer lending, and so on, and they participate in our show. Also want to thank Hurley & Clark Law Firm. Andy is with the law firm. He'll be with us in just a moment. And they have offices in Appleton, New London, Green Bay.
And Oshkosh.
And Oshkosh. Thanks, Andy. Mm-hmm. I knew you were growing, but four locations, and we really appreciate the legal expertise that Hurley & Clark gives to us on BizTalk and to the SCORE chapter. Also want to give a special thanks to Business News. They help promote our program in their biweekly periodical. If you're not subscribed to Business News, please, you should. They provide really relevant news, business news information to entrepreneurs in East Central Wisconsin. $20 a year, it's very well worth it. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll introduce Andy. We'll be talking some legal questions. Please stay tuned, and if you'd like to call in, we'll be giving you the phone numbers. You're listening to BizTalk and the Voice of the Fox Cities, 1150 WHBY. And welcome back to our first business segment of BizTalk this morning. Mm-hmm. That dead air again, Andy.
Yep.
You're listening to BizTalk on the Voice of the Fox Cities, 1150 WHBY Radio. Tony Bush here, Randy Melzer in the studio.
Right.
And our guest this morning is Andy Rosmeisel. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, gentlemen.
I'm going to be challenging
Randy
already.
Yeah, we're going to have to do the Andy-Randy act here. All right.
Andy, tell us about you and tell us about the Hurley & Clark Law Firm. Just give us a quick overview of what you do.
I'm a business attorney at the Hurley & Clark Law Firm, but I also specialize in employment, real estate, municipal law, and banking.
Okay. And Hurley & Clark, as we heard in the intro, has four offices. They've been around for a long time.
That's correct. Since about the 1950s, Don Hurley started the firm. Roger Clark came in after, and a whole host of attorneys since then.
Yep.
And could you, give us a little bit of your background, how you got involved with Hurley & Clark?
Sure. I've been an attorney with Hurley & Clark for the past 7 years. I clerked with Hurley & Clark while I was in law school. That was my introduction to the firm, but it was a real good group of people, and I wanted to stay on after I got done, and fortunately they asked me to stay on.
Yep. Okay. They are a good firm. I've known them since my banking career began back in about 74. Chuck Hartsheim is still there.
Sure is.
I'm going to be talking with him next week on some things. So it's a great firm, and they are very resourceful. And you've actually won some community awards, some community recognitions, like the best law firm, time and time again.
We're fairly proud of that. The Post-Crescent has a reader poll,
and
for the past 8 years, we've been fortunate enough to receive the best law firm in the Valley Award.
Well, we sure appreciate the sponsorship that Hurley & Clark provides to BizTalk, and that trickles into the SCORE chapter as well, so it's having a great effect on the community. Thanks a lot for that, Andy. And thanks for being here this morning.
My pleasure.
We wanted to talk a little bit about some business law issues, since that's one of your areas of expertise. And one of the things we'd like to start out with, I think, is can you give us an overview of what is the difference between a corporation, an LLC, and a partnership from a legal perspective? What's one versus the other?
Well, a corporation and an LLC are both, we refer to them as fictitious persons.
Mm-hmm.
They're both entities in and of themselves, mm-hmm. that a corporation can run, not necessarily attached to the owner. That isolates the owner from liability. As an attorney, we're pragmatic by nature, and we know that things don't always go as planned
in a business.
That's correct. And to have an entity separate than the owner, if something bad does happen, then the owner's own personal assets, his or her house, bank accounts, etc., are isolated in any legal action.
As opposed to a sole proprietorship, where if I'm running a company as a sole proprietorship, there's really no protection there for my personal assets.
Well, right, and that would also apply to partnerships.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what about partnership, LLC, corporation? There's such things as operating agreements and those types of agreements. How important are those?
Considerably important. With the advent of online legal services and just search engines in general, we've seen a lot of our customers, I'd call them after-the-fact customers, mm-hmm. come in with documents that they've prepared themselves through the aid of the Internet. It's not that difficult to form an LLC or a corporation online using the Department of Financial Institutions website or other commercial vendors' respective websites, but to round it out by completing all of the paperwork that you really need to observe corporate formalities and make sure that your goals are met is something that a lot of people miss. Mm-hmm. I call them after-the-fact customers because, unfortunately, a lot of people, business people, come into my firm and come in to see me after there's a problem. Some of these problems could have easily been rectified in the beginning if we would have had the paperwork in order, but unfortunately, business people like to save money, and I don't blame them, but a lot of times it gets them in trouble in the long run.
Signing a document before having it reviewed.
Right.
That's a big one.
Well, the other thing you mentioned is, you know, being able to pick this stuff up online and so on. It's basically boilerplate. It doesn't necessarily refer to you individually. You're going to have to modify this thing, and that's where the problems really come in. You did mention, you know, the terminology here is the corporate formalities, you know, with a operating statement being one of those. What are some of the other ones, and how does that all get put together?
A substantial corporate formality is not commingling assets.
Right.
Particularly in small companies,
right.
We find that business owners take the requisite steps of forming an entity, sometimes even having an operating agreement or bylaws. But for whatever reason, they wind up commingling their own personal accounts or own personal assets with the business's accounts and assets. In the legal world, if somebody's trying to get past this corporate entity to assets that belong to the owner of the company themselves, we would call that piercing the corporate veil.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that can be done, and it's certainly more easily done when folks have not observed corporate formalities, like having paperwork in order, like keeping accounts and assets separate, and a number of others as well.
But if someone wants to start a corporation or an LLC, they're setting the stage for a separate entity other than themselves, then they need to live that out. They can't be living like one but having two on paper. They have to live it out. They have to demonstrate, prove. My company has its own checking account. I have my own checking account.
That's right.
There's an accountability for the assets between the two entities.
And that's why we call it a fictitious person, an LLC or a corporation. It is like a person in and of itself.
It has legal rights, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
legal
right.
Entity.
Yeah, I think one of our campaigning people got into a problem by calling corporations people, and yet legally that is exactly what they are. They are a legal entity. They are a legal, quote, person.
That's one reason why corporations can live a lot longer than a human being
right.
can.
Right.
Campbell Soup has been around a long time because it's a corporate entity.
Yeah, following on, one of the things, you know, everybody gets going when they set up an operating agreement. They put together what they're going to do, who's going to do what, and so on. One of the key issues that people very seldom get to is what happens at the end when something goes wrong or you reach the other end, the exit strategies. How do you counsel people in those areas?
Well, believe it or not, the Wisconsin statutes and similar statutes in other states have a procedure to end an entity. We'd call it a default procedure. But the problem is those statutes rarely act in the way that business owners would want them to act. One of the more common statutory means of dissolving a company involves simply liquidating the assets.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you may have a son or a daughter who is poised, who's been involved with the company for years and years and years, and is poised to take over. Maybe there's another partner in the business that isn't so comfortable having his former partner's son or daughter take over. And if the only mechanism that you have in place is the statutory mechanism to potentially dissolve the company, that's not always something that the business owners want. And if you plan ahead in an operating agreement, bylaws, or other forms, buy-sells agreements, and et cetera, you can accomplish an orderly transition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We're going to take a quick break, Randy. We'll be coming back on the other side. You're listening to BizTalk on the Voice of the Fox Cities, 1150 WHBY. Welcome back to BizTalk. We're talking this morning with Andy Rossmeisel. Andy is an attorney with the law firm Herling Clark Law Firm here in Appleton, and they have offices in Oshkosh, Green Bay, and New London. If you have a question, you'd like to ask Andy a question this morning about something legal, please give us a call at 281-1150. That's 281-1150 here in Appleton. And if you're outside the Appleton area, you can reach us at 1-866-887-1150. Randy, you have a question.
Yeah, we had been talking a little bit, Andy. I do a lot of things in the marketing area. And, of course, in today's world, marketing has got to deal with the Internet. It has to deal with websites. It has to deal with the wonderful world of social media. People I've been talking to have mentioned that there is an awful lot of litigation going on, especially in the areas of website design, working with that, working with the intellectual property, and working with the various parts and pieces. Have you found or been working with this, and what kind of problems should people really be aware of when they start looking at websites?
Well, website law is kind of a combination of trademark law, intellectual property law, oftentimes misrepresentation and other common law issues such as misrepresentation. And then there's a technical aspect of website site design and ownership as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that I've seen is that when a company is hired to build a website, oftentimes, unwittingly, a business owner, when signing the contract for these services, will sign away their rights to all the intellectual property associated with the website.
By intellectual property, you mean the actual wording, the logos, the actual site itself.
That's right.
Okay.
And the problem with that is business people build up considerable goodwill a good website. The website, take the insurance industry for instance, Progressive.com. Their website is their business.
Mm-hmm.
And if they sought to go to a different website vendor, but all of that intellectual property, the logo, how it worked, and everything was held captive by their original provider, they'd be powerless, at mm-hmm. least without paying a substantial fee, to go to a different mm-hmm. provider.
Okay. So one of the things, then, that's a key issue is who owns what. Be sure you understand that when you start out.
That's a key. And that goes beyond website design. I'd say that extends to reading the fine print in any agreement that you enter.
Like a logo, developing a logo for your company.
Yeah, and that's the other area that I heard that there's a lot of litigation in, is in the contract agreement between the developer and the individual who wants the website done. The clearly understanding who's going to do what the outcomes are going to be, and what you're looking for. Do people understand that?
I dare say that most people don't understand it when they're entering into the agreement. Some people never have a problem, and things go along swimmingly, but when people do have a problem, they start to understand things the hard way.
Okay.
So a lot cheaper to have an attorney review a document before you sign it than it is to have the sign on the document and then have to deal with all the fees of having
to do it.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Morning. I have a question about easement.
Sure.
I've got an easement through my neighbor's corner for the gravel driveway that I would like to put blacktop on. Is that something I can do without, violating any sort of property rights or anything like that?
I'd like to give you a straightforward answer, but the problem is you really need to take a look at the easement itself. The language of the easement, how it was filed, whether it was filed against what we would call the benefited and or the burdened parcels. Too many issues for me to give you a straightforward answer, and I apologize. I realize that that's why you're calling in.
Right. Like on our deed, it was set up when we bought the house, and our deed just said a walking or access easement or something. It was pretty very brief. There wasn't a lot of jargon about it, really.
May I ask whether
the
person who sold you the real estate is also the person who owes you the easement?
No.
So more than likely we're dealing with a situation where the easement was granted at some point in the past. It's run with the land, and now you're the beneficiary of an easement, and we need to go back some time, go through the legal documents on file with the Register of Deeds to figure out how this easement came into place and what the exact language is.
Well, it was actually created in the creation of the property that we bought. It was split the lot into multiple lots.
Okay.
They granted an easement just to allow the driveway to exist, basically, for the lot that we bought.
Those
were all just at the time of creation, or the time that I came into it was when it was created, but it was it's not very thoroughly described in any descriptive manner. It just says, X, Y, Y dimension easement for access, and that's about it.
Well, I hate to cut you short. I guess, generally speaking, we have to go back to the language of the easement itself. Sometimes there are clues that we can divulge from the language itself, and if we can't find what we need to from that language, then there is a body of case law that we can look at. But I recommend that you come in and see me, and I'd be happy to give you some specific advice on your particular easement.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Jim. That's a good question. Easements are very common, and we need to deal with those. Andy, why don't you give us your contact information, if you would, please?
Sure. Herlin Clark, I'm at the Appleton office on Lindale Drive. That's between College Avenue and Wisconsin Avenue.
Yep.
You can reach me at 920-739-7366.
And do you have an email address that you can give out? Or
I do. How much airtime do you have? My last name is Rossmeister.
Go for it. We'll fit it in somewhere.
Yeah.
ARossmeissl at herlingclark.com.
That wasn't okay. So hard.
Ross Meisel.
Yep.
Okay, good.
We have another caller on the line. Good morning, Don.
Good morning. Thank you for your show.
You betcha.
My question is also about a boundary on a residential property. It's the lot I have is about 50 by 120. The neighbor put up a fence, and he's over onto my property by about 5 feet, and it was obvious that he was off. I tried to talk to him, but he wouldn't talk to me. He didn't have a survey. This took place about 3 or 4 years ago. Now, just recently, over the winter, he lost his house to foreclosure, and the bank has it, and they haven't put it up for sale yet. I got a map from the city. It shows the houses, and it shows he measured off of his garage, which his garage was built crooked to the line. It wasn't parallel to the line. That's where the air came in. And my question is, how long do I have to get this straightened out, and do I notify the bank that now owns it, or the new owner, or what should I do?
Well, I recommend that you do something soon, because there is a concept called adverse possession in the state of Wisconsin that essentially states that if someone uses your land and encloses your land for a period of time, that they can become the rightful owners. I can't tell you what that period of time is without sitting down and talking to you in detail, because the length of time that takes to achieve adverse possession changes depending upon the circumstances. You should see somebody soon, though.
Okay.
And I do have a recommendation. So often I'd say come and see a lawyer right away, but you may want to take this to your title company first, because part of your title insurance policy may involve them paying your cost of defense. They may hire a lawyer for you.
Okay.
And if not, come over to see me.
Okay.
Would there, Andy, just as an insight here, wouldn't there also be a need possibly to have a surveyor come in and take a look at this situation somewhere along the line?
Well, if you want to know for certain on your own that your understanding of the correct property line is right, you certainly can hire a surveyor.
Well, I do know that I'm correct because I found the stakes on either side of our house, and I measured down. And it's obvious he was correct in the rear stake, the 120 deep one. But then in the front one, he followed his garage, which if you look at the city map, it shows a actual photograph and then an actual the plot when they built them. And his garage was built crooked. And so by going by that, that's where in the frontage he's off about maybe even 6 feet, and in the rear he's right on the exact point. See, so that was a problem. But it's very obvious even without a survey. If you would look at the map, but you know he refused to talk with me. So
stakes are usually a pretty good indicator, but they're not always right.
Okay.
Bottom line is, tender this to your title company. See if they'll provide you a defense or any advice, or maybe even early compensation.
Okay.
They may hire an attorney for you, but if not, come see me and we can talk about it.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
That's a great question, Don. Thanks for the call this morning. Andy, one of the things that comes out of real estate transactions, and it can come out of business transactions as well, is the term called land contract. Can you define what a land contract is and the two parties associated with a land contract and maybe some of the unique things about a land contract versus just a sale of real estate?
I think technically a land contract is an instrument conveying a right in real estate to somebody else. But when people talk about a land contract, usually what they're talking about is a seller financing mechanism.
Right.
In this day and age, purchasers of real estate, business people, are not always able to get traditional bank financing. And as business owners or landowners are phasing out of their ownership of business or land, sometimes they built up a nest egg, and they're able to finance the transaction themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What the land contract allows is for the seller of a business to transfer what is called a vendee's interest. Then that vendee or purchaser of the business pays the seller back over time. And when all of the payments under the land contract are complete, then deed in what we would call fee simple is to the land is transferred. And at that point, when all payments are received, full ownership is vested in the purchaser.
And that's different from taking a loan at a bank and going and buying a business or a piece of property where the title is transferred right away, but now the debt is owed to the lending institution, not to the seller of the property.
Well, right. In either case, you've got debt owed to somebody,
That's right.
The seller or the lending institution. But when you take out a bank loan that's secured by a mortgage, the title's transferred right away,
right. And
the bank retains a mortgage interest.
A lien against it.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
The bank can foreclose, but usually you're looking at 3, 6, or 12 months to get that process complete.
What is the foreclosure period with a vendor if a payment is missed or there's a default?
This is a tremendous advantage to the land contract financing mechanism.
For the vendor.
For the vendor, the seller of the business, usually can accomplish the foreclosure process in about a month. But it's the redemption period, the waiting period, or the cooling off period, as we sometimes refer to it, that is so much shorter. Can be 6, 7, or 10 days versus 3, 6, or 12 months in a mortgage context.
That's a term I think they call it, refer to it as the right of strict foreclosure.
That's correct.
Yep. And when there's a mortgage on the property, there's a protracted period to redeem, cool off. The law gives the borrower much more time in a loan situation to redeem the situation.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And just as we were talking here, and also our caller was mentioning too, when you start dealing with land and you start dealing with transfers and easements and all of this type of thing, all of this is a legal contract that you get involved in. Each one of these can have its own little quirks, its own little parts and pieces that you have to know. And just because you and the person who entered into it 25 years ago were good friends at that time doesn't necessarily mean that that friendship's going to carry over and everything's going to be just fine. People have a tendency to get really strange as soon as you bring either money or property into the transaction. So, again, my point at that is you need to have an attorney look at the land contract, look at the easement, look at the agreement to buy or sell a property or a business before you get into the problem, not afterward. Get there, you know, it's better to have a little prevention than it is to have to pay for that cure at the other end.
There's no question.
Okay.
That's very good advice, Randy, and hopefully people will follow that. It's much cheaper to pay the attorney for a couple hours' work ahead of time than to have to work your way out of a problem that could cause even the loss of a business. We're coming up on another break here, so what we'll do is we'll take it right now, and we'll come back on the other side. We'll finish up the final segment of the show. You're listening to BizTalk on the Voice of the Fox Cities, 1150 WHBY. And welcome back to BizTalk for our final segment this morning. We're talking with Andy Rossmeisel from the Herling Clark Law Firm, and we're talking about things like contracts and land contracts and being smart about identifying what the issue is before you sign something. Read the fine print and protect yourself. And in some cases, it's really economically a big advantage to you if you have an attorney review a document before you sign it. I'll give out the phone numbers one more time. We might have time for a couple of calls. 281-1150 here in Appleton, 281-1150. And if you're outside Appleton, you can reach us at 1-866-887-1150. Andy, I'd like to ask you a little bit about buying and selling a business. There's a lot of that going on today. A lot of folks are in the boomer ages. They're looking to retire. There are folks working in the world today, and they want to start their own business or maybe buy one. In terms of buying a business or selling a business, we can sell the stock of the company, or we can sell the assets of the company, buy the stock or buy the assets. What's the difference? What are the advantages or disadvantages?
A purchaser of a business who buys the stock of the company continues the business, assumes all of the assets, all of the liabilities, usually the bank accounts unless they're expressly excluded from the transaction. Whereas somebody who just buys assets on an asset purchase through an asset purchase agreement typically is just buying piecemeal a truck, the inventory, etc., maybe even the goodwill of the business,
right.
Usually the goodwill of the business.
Yep.
The advantage to structuring a transaction as an asset purchase is that you can cut off the liabilities. A lot of times a buyer doesn't know what sort of legal problems have been brewing before the purchase, and it's more comforting to cut those liabilities off on the date of the transaction.
Sure.
In fact, even though it appears seamless, a lot of the same employees will continue on. In an asset purchase, the employees are technically fired on 11:59 p.m. the night before the sale and rehired by the new business if the new business owner wants
to. Got it.
Okay.
Andy, we have two calls here. First, we'll go with Gary. Good morning, Gary. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. How are you doing?
Real fine.
Good. I have a question. I bought a vehicle off of Craigslist, and it was advertised as a 2003 Pontiac Grand Am. And I went out and I looked at the vehicle, and we negotiated a price, and I purchased the vehicle, and I took the title and put it up into the sun visor, and I didn't look at the title real well, obviously. And to make a long story short, I took the car to the body shop, had some work done on it, spent about $300 on the car. I turned around and went to the motor vehicle department to register it, and I find out it's a 2001. Rather than a 2003. So I called the gentleman I bought it from, and well, he kind of laughed at me and just put me off. Do I have any leg to stand on?
Well, you probably do. How long has it been since you purchased the vehicle?
A little over a week.
Okay. There are buyer's remorse clauses, but I think that in a week you may have gone beyond that period. There is a law in the state of Wisconsin, we call it 100.18, but essentially it prevents misrepresentations, or at least gives a buyer a remedy when there has been a misrepresentation. I've always been taught not to talk about statute of limitations on the show, because without knowing the exact circumstances of your case, I don't want to give you bad advice. But my advice to you is pretty simple. See somebody soon if you want to have a remedy here. Now, depending upon how much you paid for the car, you may have to pay an attorney more than the car's even worth. So you're going to have to make a business decision yourself as to whether or not it's worth it to pursue this. Bottom line, if you want to do anything, see somebody soon, and potentially there's a remedy for you under Wisconsin Statute 100.18.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Gary. That's a good call and a good question, and I'm sure it happens more than we like. We have another caller on the line. Tim, we have about a minute and 30 seconds left. So we have about a minute left, Bob said.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You
the reason I'm calling is I had caught the portion when you were talking about adverse possession on property. We had purchased a home 3 years ago, and we were getting ready to do a renovation project, so I had the property surveyed. Turns out that about 4 feet of the neighbor's driveway is on my property, about 10 feet of their house on my property. It was a garage up until about 25 years ago that was converted into a home. I sent a certified letter to the now owner of the property because they did out, seeing if we could, you know, throw out a resolution for them to buy that portion of property. But I wanted a little more detail on what is it that I should ask the title company that owns the title to the house about what kind of things I should do.
We're running out of time here. Just explain the circumstances to the title company. See if they'll provide a defense. They may hire an attorney, and if they don't, give me a call. I'd elaborate, but unfortunately, we're just running out of time.
Sure. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Okay. It's a good question. Andy can be reached at 734-739-7366.
That's right, 739-7366.
And he'll be back in the office on Monday. A Hurling Clark Law Firm is a very prestigious firm in the Valley, long time, and very good at what they do. Andy, we want to thank you for coming on. Can you give us a quick biz tip?
A quick biz tip would come see me before there's a problem. A lot easier and a lot cheaper to take care of a problem before it becomes a major problem.
Well said. You've been listening to Biz Talk on the Voice of the Fox Cities, 1150 WHBY.